Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the show. Hour number two of Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're on from 9 to noon, bringing your Sunday mornings a special kind of joy. Unless you're a Royals fan, I accidentally pooped on your hopes last segment. I don't mean to. I'm trying to be hopeful, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time. We'll revisit that later on. And as always, if you want to call into the show, it's 913-3810-810. We've already been all over the place this morning, and I hope to continue to do that. But what I want to do right now is revisit something that we touched on last week that I think is really interesting that has a new development, or at least I found something new for. So assuming that you weren't listening last week, I was going based off of Mel Kiper had a new mock draft. One of the mock drafts that, as you know, means absolutely nothing. No one ever gets a mock draft right. It's not even like no one gets the first round right. No one gets the first 10 picks right ever. Certainly no one ever picks correctly to number 27. But what it is it's basically these quote-unquote experts giving their opinions as to what the most important positions of need are for each team throughout the first round. That's in how they think value may fall. But Mel Kiper had the Chiefs taking the East Carolina receiver Zay Jones in the first round in his mock draft. And here's the little blurb that he had with it. If you heard this already last week, I'm sorry, I promise there's something new. So Jerry Macklin had a down season 2016. The Chiefs' top pass catchers were tight end Travis Kelce, rookie fifth-round pick Tyreek Hill, who's not a true number one wideout. He goes on to talk more about Jones. That's not important. The thing that I think was unfair is saying that Tyreek Hill is not a true number one wideout. I don't know what the actual logic to that is. I think the logic to it is probably he seems small. But Tyreek Hill is pretty much the same physical person as DeSean Jackson. Except for Tyreek Hill ran a faster 40. Tyreek Hill's listed at 5'10", 185. DeSean Jackson's listed at 5'10", 175. Hill ran a 4.29 40. DeSean Jackson ran a 4.35. And what I thought I was doing last week was try to explain to you guys how Tyreek Hill's going to be misused next year and how he has already been misused. But really what's important is how will the Chiefs interpret Tyreek Hill for next season? Because they brought him in this year not knowing really what exactly he was capable of. I think overall they did a pretty good job getting Hill to a point to where he was a big part of the offense. Even though it often felt like it wasn't enough. They were talking about working in Hill in packages. You know, getting him some packages, getting him some plays. I want to see Tyreek Hill's package be the one that's every offensive play. I want to see him on the field all the time. Jeremy Maclin doesn't have packages built for him. He just goes out and lines up as the number one receiver. And I think Tyreek Hill has that DeSean Jackson potential to where he's still used running back kickoffs or punts wherever you find him more valuable and can be used across the middle of the field when need be. But if he can run the routes right, he has every tool to be a number one receiver in the truest sense of the word. Andy Reid had some quotes about Tyreek Hill that came out last week that make me think that Andy Reid's inclined to agree with me. This is Reid on Tyreek Hill. He was running back that they kind of moved around a little bit in college, I add parenthetically. His routes were, when he first came in, were kind of raw. They weren't as disciplined as they need to be in this offense. So much of this offense is timing and being in a certain spot and knowing defenses, knowing secondaries and all that, how you're going to make adjustments. That was all new. He's a smart kid. He picked it up so fast and he was able to play at our level. Andy Reid saying he came in raw, the routes weren't good enough. He got the routes good enough quickly enough to become a big part of this offense. Now, I'm personally expecting them to take another step up over the offseason. Tyreek Hill has an entire offseason now to get acclimated to the Chiefs' offense even further, to get those routes run precisely, to make sure that timing is all completely accurate. Here's a stat of Tyreek Hill's snaps last season. I believe this was from Adam Teicher. Of Hill's 401 snaps, 207 came as a wide receiver, 163 as a slot receiver, and 31 out of the backfield. Is that surprising to you? That only 163 of his snaps came as a slot guy? I was shocked that over half of his snaps were as an actual wideout. Completely shocked by that. Because I always wanted to see more of it. Now, I would love to see how many of his, like, catches came out of each of those lineups. Perhaps he was getting a higher number of targets out of the backfield, a higher percentage of targets coming out of the slot to where we all kind of got lied to by our eyes. But by this count, Tyreek Hill was lining up outside last season. That jump to this season doesn't seem quite so absurd anymore. I don't think it ever seemed absurd, but some of you did. And there, I got some feedback on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, by the way. I got some feedback on Twitter of people saying, well, you know, it's the route running, or it's his hands, or he doesn't seem like he can take a big hit. The route running has been addressed there. Andy Reid says it got better last year throughout the season, and now he's got an offense to get that better. That's something you expect to get better. He is not just a fast guy, he's a quick guy. He's able to change directions in a way that he's going to leave a lot of corners behind if his route running continues to improve. I don't get the criticism about his hands. I don't know if I can find his drop rate in a way that will be valuable time-wise here, but I'm going to try because I think you would be surprised at how good Tyreek Hill's hands have been. He also made some circus catches coming back to make up for an Alex Smith mistake. Tyreek Hill's hands are not one of my concerns. If you're a Chiefs fan in 2017, you're probably a Chiefs fan in, say, 2010. Dwayne Bowe was a number one receiver with hand problems. But he was a number one receiver, no question. Now, you might wish he wasn't. Charlie is crumpling right now in his chair across from me, just doubling over in sadness. Tyreek Hill is not that kind of a hand problem. And maybe he can't take a big hit in the way that you would like to see. But what receiver can? Also, how often does Tyreek Hill have to? If you're a receiver, tell me when you're taking a big hit. What I think of Wes Welker and Julian Edelman going across the middle and getting their heads knocked off by an inside linebacker who's upset that they're in his territory. That's when wide receivers take big hits. The way to preserve your receivers is to line them up outside and tell them to run a post or run straight downfield. I mean, there are a couple of instances where maybe if you're running across the middle deeper, the safety might knock your head off, but that's going to happen pretty infrequently. It's going to happen never if the safety can't catch you. And that's what Tyreek Hill does. But especially you have him running in a straight line, safety's going to have to get a heck of an angle to even get to Tyreek Hill. Much less to get him in such a way where it's going to be such a devastating hit that he's going to have a hard time getting off the field. And I don't think Tyreek Hill is any more vulnerable to that than literally any other receiver in football. And maybe you say, you know, a Calvin Johnson type seems like a guy who can take a hit and get back up, but hits that violent and that perfectly timed, that perfectly executed, it's gonna rattle everybody. And Tyreek Hill's shown himself to be pretty good at not just dealing with hits, but having them glance off of him. Tyreek Hill's shown himself to be very bouncy. I can think of a couple times on near the sidelines where he'll seem dead to rights to some defender. And then he'll just, like, stop. And he'll get, like, chipped. And he'll spin around, then he'll walk out of bounds and go, doo-doo-doo. All right. That was fine. He seemed to survive those rather well. I thought that was interesting. I think it's another instance of our eyes lying to us a little bit with Tyreek Hill, and even Andy Reid beginning to indicate that I think he's going to have a bigger role on the outside next season, which I think is a very good thing for this offense. It then makes you ask the eternal question of, well, then what is the issue with this offense? Because this offense was not good last year. I mean, truly, the offense was objectively bad for huge portions of last season. So what's the issue? What's the concern? What's the fix? I mean, we know it, right? I fought for Alex Smith for a long time. I defended Alex Smith. And I don't even regret defending Alex Smith in the instances that I did. Because most of my defenses of Alex Smith were, he's here. The Chiefs aren't going to draft Geno Smith. They can take a guy in the second if they want. You know, Teddy Bridgewater would have looked great on this team, but whatever. Bring in actual competition. That's all good. But let's give Alex Smith this offense with actual weapons, with an actual offensive line. And let's see what he actually comes up with. And last season was clearly a regression. And that's the end for my optimism. In fact, there was a tweet that popped up this week that was showing quarterbacks up against pressure, and how pressure affects quarterbacks, and the number of the percentage of times that the quarterback was under pressure. And the stat for the Chiefs, Alex Smith was pressured like third fewest times out of like the 20 or so qualifying quarterbacks. The Chiefs' offensive line was shockingly good. Which, again, if you buy into those metrics, it makes a little more sense why the Chiefs are so willing to buy into the extensions for these offensive linemen. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif looked like a problem for a large portion of the season, and he got a giant contract. Why is that? Well, one piece of metric that I looked at a lot last season was yards before contact for running backs. And the left side of the offensive line was in the top portion of the NFL, and the right side of the offensive line was very, very near the bottom. Like something like the bottom three off the top of my head. But it seems like in pass blocking, as your eyes probably told you last season, the pass blocking was pretty good. Now this leads me to a cross-sport comparison, or at least a cross-sport understanding of something that I think is really valuable and really interesting. I haven't heard a coach speak like this in a long time. This actually happened, this happened back in December. And I heard about it for the first time 2 weeks ago. Didn't get to it last week. And am now going to read it to you. This is Dan D'Antoni, brother, I think, of the D'Antoni coach that you know of Mike D'Antoni. And he's the coach at Marshall, basketball coach at Marshall. And just listen, I'm literally going to read you this exchange that he had back in December with the reporter. And I promise this can be related to any sport that you want. It's especially relevant to basketball. But I was reminded of it just now by the metrics of the offensive line, saying, you know, because very often, I guess, we'll go get to it in a second. Very often, the presentation of metrics in sports is met with, I don't need your damn metrics. I don't need your calculations. I know what I saw. I don't know why those people are always cowboys from the 1800s. Whatever. I don't know why those are cowboys. Yeehaw, little doggy. Keep your metrics out of this saloon. I don't know. But that seems to be the response to metrics being presented to people who aren't particularly metrically minded. And I even struggle with that. I am not Captain Sabermetric. But I also enjoy what they bring to the conversation. It can give you a deeper understanding of what you're watching. I think that's the place where I enjoy it the most, where it can give me a deeper understanding of what it is that I'm watching. If you have to use solely sabermetrics and solely some selectively chosen statistics to support a point that seems to go against what your eyes are seeing, then I'm willing to say, you know what, we might be using that wrong. But what Dan D'Antoni says here is, I think, a perfect use of these advanced analytics. Because as I give you this, think about what you see from the top teams in the NBA. What is it that we've seen? What did you see last year? Last year, Golden State had the best regular season in NBA history, and they did it by shooting an absurd number of threes. Like, literally absurd. Like, hard to fathom. And you go, why did that work? Just because they had a great shooter, maybe a couple of great shooters? It certainly helps. You have to have good shooters doing your three-point shooting. But what it really was, as much as anything, is a manipulation of the math. The math is impacted by your players, but it was a manipulation of the math. Here's the question that D'Antoni was given. You guys take a lot of threes. Did you feel like there maybe wasn't quite enough working the ball into the paint early on? D'Antoni responds, you're old school, aren't you? Do you watch the NBA ever? Reporter, yeah. D'Antoni. You see those top three teams, Golden State, do they work it in? My brother in Houston, the biggest turnaround in the league, do they work it in? You can get to any computer and run what the best shots are, and it will tell you that the post-up is the worst shot in basketball. If you want to run down and try to get in there and to shoot over somebody, then you're beating analytics. The best shot in basketball is that corner three. The next best shot in basketball is any other three. Other than free throws, which we try to do, when you just get to the foul line, you score 1.5 points for every time you go to the foul line in the pros. It just trickles down. It's the same thing for college kids. Reporter jumps in. Danny, were you sort of able to lull them in? D'Antoni. I haven't finished my damn analytics story yet. Do you have to go to bed or something because you're worn out? He continues. If you can get a layup and it's clean, it's not one that's highly contested, it's 1.8 points per attempt. It's 1.3 from that corner. 1.27. Do you know what a post-up is with a guy standing over top of you? It's 0.78. So you run your team down there, and we'll see how long you can stay with teams that can play the other way. You've seen it in the NBA. The last two championships have been Cleveland and Golden State. What do? You don't see anybody post-up. They just spread that thing out and go. I changed a long time ago. I coached for 15 years like a dummy, running down there real hard so I can get it in there for the worst shot in basketball. I didn't even know what I was doing. The short version of my answer is no. Can we order more of that, please? Can we get more post-game press conferences like that, please? That's amazing. What a response. But it also makes sense, I think. I mean, if you hear that entire clip, you hear that entire quote, you say, okay, a clean layup, like a fast break layup, is nearly 2 points per shot, 1.8 points per attempt. You're going to make those almost every time. But if you go and try to post up, you're averaging 0.78 points per attempt. Attempt, not made shot, obviously, because that would just be two. But attempt. You're getting 1.3 from a corner three. Of course, you're missing them more. But overall, those shots are just worth more. It's just math. I found that to be a very interesting way of using analytics to help us understand what we're seeing. We're seeing offenses, especially in the NBA, spread it out, try to get those corner threes. Outside shooting teams are the ones having the most success. But why? Why is that what we're seeing? That's why. That's the math. If you want to call in and talk about college basketball, the Royals, the Chiefs, I mean, you could talk about sporting, but you're going to have to do most of the heavy lifting on that one. You can call the show 913-3810-810 is the phone number. Whenever we come back, Charlie Carlin is going to teach us some science. That's next.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I keep meaning to do polls. I want to do polls with the show, but I don't ever ask good questions. I don't really want to be like, you know, do you think Tyreek Hill could be a number one receiver? Because that's kind of hacky and gross. I want to ask is, do KU fans hate me?
Yeah, yes or no polls are kind of lame.
Yeah, it's just, what are you doing? Like, it's just, you're just saturating a Twitter feed with, like, actual sportsy polls.
People are afraid to vote, though, because you're just going to get mad at them and roast them.
Well, if they just vote anonymously, you know, I can roast in mass. But I'm not going to, like, get to call anyone out individually. In fact, even those Facebook commenters that I lit on fire this morning to start the show, I didn't even bring in their names. I just explained my disdain for them. We just got two phone calls at the same time, which was distracting, because we're going to eventually soon here, we're going to go to Charlie for his semi-weekly science segment. It's very exciting. If you don't enjoy science, that's fine. You have to enjoy Charlie trying to explain science and trying to explain semi-interesting news developments. It's always completely thrilling. I also want to talk about a couple Chiefs mock drafts because I have some sort of illness that will not let me look away. And it's becoming interestingly close to achieving a sort of singularity with where the Chiefs look to be headed, depending on, I guess, who you're looking at, whose predictions you're looking at, that is. But before we go to either of those things, let's go to the phones. It's 913-3810-810. Patrick, you're on Sports Sunday. What's up?
First of all, what date is the draft on?
I believe I just saw on NFL.com that it's 25 days from us, April 27th.
Okay. Well, while I make my comment, I'm going to say, well, let's talk about the Chiefs. I think I said that on this program with Saran Petro on. We need a good running back. Yeah, we need a quarterback. We need a halfway power back, you know, because I said last week a lot of yards we couldn't get because speed is good, but sometimes you need that big man like the old bus.
Right.
So we need to look at somebody like that. And then last week you made a comment, I ain't heard nobody else be brave enough to talk about this, connecting sports and politics, where the president, you saw an article somewhere, and he even talked about the fact that Kevin Kaepernick didn't have a job, and he believed it was because of his political beliefs.
Yeah.
Not so much of the sports. Well, see, back in my time, you couldn't even... today, I think sports and politics are mixing more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, and not only sports, Hollywood, you know, stars. I believe what they say and who they vote for, if they make it publicly, influences people, including myself sometimes. And I think, no, nobody ain't drafted Kaepernick or talked about him, so that's unfair. It's almost like back in the old days, if you say something, wrong thing, you lose your job. So I thought we've come a long ways here, but we still got a long ways to go. So that's all I'll say.
Patrick, thank you for the call. I appreciate it, and I have to agree. The other thing that's really interesting that has sort of went under the radar is what John Elway did last week. He, like, formally urged – well, he endorsed Neil Gorsuch, the Trump's nominee for Supreme Court Justice, on a sheet of Broncos letterhead. Elway, like, formally endorsed him, eventually being confirmed as the next Supreme Court Justice. I mean, Elway did that as the head of the Denver Broncos. The stationery has a Broncos logo on it. You can see the picture, just if you Google Elway Supreme Court or whatever. Sports and politics are intertwined for several reasons. I think partially because celebrities are bringing out their beliefs in a way that I think makes a ton of sense. Some people hate it, and I understand how and why. If you're a person that wants to have your sports pure of other topics, but if you're someone that has a public voice and you have a strong feeling that something is unjust or that one candidate is supremely better than the other, you are going to use that voice to try to influence the people around you, to try to explain yourself to the people around you. We all do it. Most of us just do it on a smaller scale. I mean, maybe there is something generational here. Maybe there is something where younger people are more willing to try to kind of like publicly have conversations about why they're leaning in a direction on a topic and on an issue, on a candidate. So maybe there is, because I usually, whenever I get pushback on that idea, it's from an older generation. So there might be something generational there shifting or just shifted. But they are absolutely intertwined. And now we're at a point where Patrick, I really enjoy the point of saying, you know, we used to be at a place where you couldn't talk about politics or risk losing your job. And it seemed like advancement, but now Kaepernick challenges that. And you can call in and say, well, now it's because Colin Kaepernick isn't a good quarterback anymore. I talked about that last week. You can listen to the podcast if you want that. I'm not going to do that again today. But that's not what Donald Trump said. Like, the president said the reason Colin Kaepernick isn't getting a job is because of my tweets. Owners don't want to get an angry tweet. Like, we have the audio of Donald Trump saying that. They've intertwined in both directions. Colin Kaepernick made a political statement. Donald Trump made a Colin Kaepernick statement. They're inseparable now. And I'm cool with that because I like both sports and politics, and I don't mind my potatoes and my carrots touching. I'm happy to have those mixed together. Because frankly, I think it makes sports interesting in new ways. And I'm always interested whenever it goes in the other direction, where sports get into politics. I mean, I have this really strange, like, vague memory of hearing, like, John McCain talk about, like, the Diamondbacks or something. Or the Cardinals on, like, Dan Patrick's radio show way back in the day. I don't know if that was actually Dan Patrick. It doesn't matter. But I remember listening to that. I think it was probably during McCain's campaign for president. And going, like, that's cool. Like, I like that. I like hearing a politician who I think's got his head on straight, like, talk about how he enjoys sports. Because I enjoy sports. There's some common ground there. I've always enjoyed it going in that direction also. I also like seeing athletes say, I have an opinion here, I see an injustice here, I see a whatever, and I want to make that known. I want to share that with people. As long as it's genuine. And in today's political climate, I don't think I've seen anybody make a political statement and go, oh, that's disingenuous. You're just saying that, to make people like you. Because the easiest way to get people to like you is to shut up. I mean, man. If you just be neutral and you're going to get... No one's going to have a problem with your neutrality. That's not true. Depends on who you are. Yeah, from Kaepernick now to John Elway, they've become one and the same. I also agree with Patrick. He talked about last week a little bit, too, that the Chiefs are going to have to be able to move the ball. And I talked about the offensive line earlier on. The offensive line was pretty good in pass protection last year. Really struggled, especially on the right side of the line. The Chiefs have some speed in the backfield still. We all saw Spencer Ware as kind of like that power back, but he became more and more of a finesse back last season, where he was really good out of the backfield catching passes. He was really good in space in a way that I was shocked to see. But it ended up turning out that he wasn't picking up third and short, which you've got to have for one reason or another. Charlie, do you remember the first thing that Patrick said? I was working backwards just then, and I feel like he started off with something else that I wanted to talk about, but I can't remember what it was anymore. That's right. I'm going to talk about the draft in a little bit, but first, what I think could be considered the diamond in the rough of this show, a segment that we created several weeks ago that I think we've done now twice and altogether because Charlie doesn't come prepared for this, but that's okay, because part of the joy of this segment is Charlie trying to explain it and answer questions about something that he learned about literally 10 minutes ago.
Take a rolling pin to your globe and make Earth flat again. It's time for the Sports Sunday Science segment starring Charlie Charlin.
Charlie?
First of all, I prepare so well for this.
Okay.
I research this, I look it up, I read everything. But
Everything. I do everything.
As you know, yesterday was April Fool's Day. This isn't too sciencey. It's kind of more history and just kind of something I was just curious about because of all the April Fool's stuff. But do you know where?
Okay, great.
Do you know
By
where?
By the way, turn the music. I can barely hear you. Turn that music down a little bit.
Do you know where April Fool's Day comes from?
I don't. I don't know the origin of April Fool's Day.
Yeah. So
the birth of Christ?
No.
Okay, that's my only guess.
They don't really have a specific reason. People, there's speculation all over the place. But what they're saying is that it dates back to 1582 when France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar because New Year's Day used to be on April 1st, but now it's on January 1st. Some are saying that it's the birth of Jesus. And, like, all
no,
that sort of stuff.
No, is
not
the birth of Christ
of
an actual thing?
Something else. Thought here.
Charlie is off the mic now.
It's terrible.
Looking at the computer screen.
No.
This is perfect. This has been a perfect
but
version
with,
of this.
See, so much research. But with... you saw the some of the pranks and stuff that people were doing. See, that was just a prank right there. Did you see Google doing the Mrs. Pac-Man, Google Maps doing Mrs. Pac-Man,
yeah,
or
was...
Snapchat doing an Instagram filter, Dees Hayes right there.
Ooh, I didn't know. What was that? What did you just say?
It's a Dees Hayes. Decent Hayes. I don't know.
That's what I thought you said. I was like, well, that's very hip of you, Charlie.
Yeah.
I saw both of those. I didn't know the Snapchat one was an April Fool's thing, but the Google Maps turning in every road into Mrs. Pac-Man.
Right.
Super dangerous.
Yeah, that's not
you know whenever I open Google Maps? Whenever I'm like taking my car out of gear and like, all right, Google Maps, open up, here's where I'm going. And I was like, what's this Mrs. Pac-Man thing? So I click it. It's like, oh my, it's trying to get me to play Pac-Man while I'm driving. So I did, of course. Saw 20 minutes on the road.
Yeah, that's it's probably shouldn't do that. Yeah. And then a Cartoon Network did the loop of the reverse April Fool's joke, like I mentioned.
What do you mean reverse
Adult
April
Swim.
Fool's? What do you mean reverse
I don't know.
April
they,
Fool's
they were,
joke?
They were saying that they were going to come out with the new season of Rick and Morty, show that you're familiar of.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. And, but everyone was thinking, nah, April 1st, nah, they're not going to do it. It's going to be an April Fool's joke, that sort of thing, blah, blah, blah. And then they ended up coming on it and just streamed it on their website on loop all day yesterday. I haven't yet to watch it, but I'm really excited to do that.
I've done one Google search, and I think I might have more information than you gave me on the origin of April Fool's Day.
Probably, but I've got a whole bunch of links right here, and I'm just I read somewhere that it might be just the birth. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, there you go. Origin of April Fool's Day. Science.
Thank you, Charlie, for that gripping rendition of the Sports Sunday Science segment starring Charlie Charlin.
This is Sports Sunday.
So Disney Channel's, you know, pushing their nonsense that all you millennials love this, you know, nonsense. That's why you guys lost the election.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I think that went well.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. Sports Sunday. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Charlie Carlin, running the board. This song holds up, man. Early Fall Out Boy holds up. I will fight you on that. I'll find someone who disagrees, and I will absolutely fight it. Welcome back to the show. You can tweet me on Twitter, at JB Briscoe. You can bring your thoughts, your comments, your feedback, your suggestions, any of that on Twitter. Also on Twitter, Kean Fahey of PreSnapReads.com just tweeted out an article that he published about Patrick Mahomes and how he talked about upside. Charles, you're going to keep playing? That's fine with me. Ugh. Distractingly good. I'm having a hard time focusing. Okay, goodbye, Fall Out Boy. I've seen them live twice. Is that the least surprising fact about me? I mean, there's a lot of things that I say to people, and like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That explains a lot of things. But I've seen Fall Out Boy twice, and I mean, it just can't surprise anyone who's ever seen me, much less spoken to me. I saw them once. I think it was at the Uptown, some small theater when they were coming back from their hiatus. And then once, last summer, with Charlie, tell me if this is a tour that makes sense to you or if this is a tour that you would go see. It was Hoodie Allen opening for Wiz Khalifa and Fall Out Boy. It was one of the strangest...
What a combo.
It was one of the strangest concert combinations I'd ever seen. So, of course, I had to go.
Of course.
I think it was at Cricket, the amphitheater or whatever.
Whatever it's called now.
Yeah. And it was amazing. It was super weird. We got, like, the cheapest tickets possible, stood back in some grass, and then tried to keep up for Wiz Khalifa, went hard for Fall Out Boy, went home having seen a wide variety of music.
Very wide variety.
Yeah. Wiz Khalifa came out.
Would you
go ahead?
Except this is a compliment that you kind of look like Patrick Stump.
Oh, I've gotten that before for sure.
Yeah.
Depending on what stage of my life you find me in, I've looked like Patrick Stump in his different phases of life.
Which, by the way, if anyone's wondering, that's the Fall Out Boy lead singer. I didn't know his name either.
If anyone is wondering, yeah. Don't patronize people like that. Everyone knows that Patrick Stump is the lead singer of Fall Out Boy.
He's my boy.
Yeah, depending on what stage of life you find Patrick Stump and what stage of life you find me, there are definite comparisons to be made. I was blonde for a while. I was not a very good version of him then. But he used to be real fat. If you find me in my chubby days or my current chubby days, I look like fat Patrick Stump. I never looked like skinny Patrick Stump. My body is too stump-shaped. Charlie, you're smiling against the microphone. Just say it. Just say whatever it is you're going to say. Just say the thing.
No.
You're a weenie.
A weenie?
You're a weenie.
I haven't been called that in a while.
I can't. What am I gonna call you? What am I going to call you on the radio through a microphone?
A lot of things, actually.
You're a weenie, Charlie. Kean Fahey wrote this for Pre-Snap Reads about Pat Mahomes and the allure of upside. I think it's really interesting because I have slowly fallen in love with Pat Mahomes. First slowly, then all at once, like falling asleep. And it's a quote from The Fault in Our Stars. I'm having a really millennial show today. I'm sorry. We've spent time on Fall Out Boy. I just referenced The Fault in Our Stars. I talked about Mario, Super Mario Baseball earlier. Very millennial show, I'm sorry. But I'm looking like Walter Football. They've still got the Chiefs taking Pat Mahomes in their main mock draft with the same logic that we've gone through several times. And yeah, this is their most recently updated one. It's just stayed consistent from what I can tell. And although they had an April Fool's draft, in which case they had the San Francisco 49ers drafting a new owner, which is really funny. They also had the Bears taking ruby slippers, some shoes from Kansas. Little Jayhawk going third overall in this little April Fool's draft. Anyway, now I got to see what they took. Had the Chiefs taking, right? I've got to read their pick for what the Chiefs did in April Fool's draft. I'm on my way. I'm almost there. And, oh, there's a bunch of mannequin legs for the Raiders. That's strange. For context, 24, I promise this is worth it. This whole thing was worth it. This is a good payoff for Chiefs fans. At 24, the Oakland Raiders take mannequins. Number 25, the Houston Texans take Mike Glennon. Number 26, the Seattle Seahawks draft Lindale White, running back, USC. At number 27, the Kansas City Chiefs take Joe Mixon. Which is an actual player in the actual NFL draft.
And a player I was actually going to ask you about. What were your thoughts about
just
him?
Go here.
So that's good. That's good. He was on the April Fools.
I mean, like, the Green Bay Packers at number 29 take hundreds of tables. The Atlanta Falcons take a running portion of the playbook. The Patriots at 32 take food for Tom Brady. Chiefs take Joe Mixon, which is the funniest possible answer. Here's what the write-up for that is. Andy Reid took the podium to explain this pick. Reid said. Mr. Andy Reid believes that selecting Joe Mixon is not a big deal because he's already gave a second chance to a man who electrocuted dogs and took bets on how long they'd last underwater, Reid's translator said. Despite this explanation, there was an outcry that Mixon would be selected three times in the first round. Roger Goodell addressed this. So apparently Joe Mixon had been going several other times this mock draft also. that just absolutely tickles me. In Walter Football's actual mock draft, it's still Pat Mahomes. And Keen Fahey's article that I've now said I was going to read three times has a really interesting perspective on both Mahomes and what it means to have upside. And his article starts off this way. You can read it at presnapreads.com. So this is the time of the year when you hear about what a player can be taught. You can't teach speed, but you can teach route running. You can't teach size, but you can teach hand placement. You can't teach arm strength, but you can teach footwork. Coaches themselves often drive these points home. Fahey goes on to say, you know, players don't actually change that much. It's very rare for a wide receiver to become tremendously smooth at running good routes if he came in running routes very mechanically. Unless a quarterback is good enough to start, he's not getting any real development snaps. Sure, he'll play in the preseason carry-out roles in practice, he says, but that's not the same as being in actual games. That brings us to Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes is a Texas Tech product who will turn 22 early in his rookie season. He has some gaudy college numbers, including a 41-10 touchdown-to-interception ratio during his final season. Those numbers came in one of those offenses that has produced a litany of prospects with big numbers who went on to fail spectacularly in the NFL. That isn't warding off the first-round talk, especially after he threw the ball 78 yards at his pro day. That arm strength and his ability to extend plays as a passer is what's making Mahomes appealing to NFL teams. His best plays all come when he breaks the pocket into the right flat. Mahomes keeps his eyes up and aggressively seeks out opportunities to throw back infield, across his body, and against the grain of his momentum. He goes on to say, this is the only area of Mahomes' performance
where that is better than most NFL starters at that specific thing. Because being able to throw the ball 78 yards is a cool party trick, but it doesn't actually offer much value on the field. There's value in Mahomes' ability to create huge velocity on his passes, he says, but he has issues. In fact, we talked about Mahomes' feet a few times. We talked about how he's got this arm strength, he has these gaudy college numbers, but what's going on with his feet? He has happy feet, right? Well, Fahey says it's worse than that. So a huge percentage of Mahomes' deep passes float because of his footwork. He's often aimlessly heaving the ball into the air for defenders and receivers alike to react to it. He turns open receivers into 50-50 balls, flat out misses receivers running in behind the defense, and doesn't show any consistency with his ball placement against tight coverage. This article is like single-handedly kind of pulling me back from, if not the Mahomes desperation, at least the Mahomes love. He talked about Mahomes' tape against Oklahoma and says that in that specific game, the tape showed that of an undraftable quarterback. And this is his conclusion. The question then becomes, what is the upside? What is the value of a strong-armed passer who can't throw deep or take advantage of the velocity he creates on shorter throws? The inevitable comparisons to Colin Kaepernick or Tyrod Taylor will be used, but both Taylor and Kaepernick show off more discipline with their feet and better accuracy. Both are better decision makers who break down coverages faster. You have to have a vision with the quarterback that you draft. Drafting Mahomes means drafting someone who needs years of work that history tells us won't work. It apparently also means investing a first-round pick. That's a really, really harsh judgment from a guy who would know. Like, Fahey is writing his like preseason quarterback analysis book right now. And he's watching every quarterback. He's writing about everybody in the league. He's analyzing everything. He's doing a Brian Hoyer chapter, just as much as doing a Tom Brady chapter. You have to suffer. You have to be a suffering type of person to do that. And to come away from the Mahomes tape with that kind of conclusion, he's got to make you think twice. That's scary. That's concerning. That's discouraging. Like, now I'm going to be thinking about that through the draft. Before this story, I was looking forward to draft day and seeing maybe the Chiefs get their quarterback of the future. Now I'm looking at it and saying, man, this is a guy with fatal flaws. The problem is, who in the draft doesn't have some of those? There's not a quarterback there at 27 who's going to be ready for the NFL right away. And that's the problem with picking 27. It's the problem the Chiefs have lived with for so long now.